Welcome to STEM Spots, a weekly science review produced in cooperation with the Missouri State University Department of Physics, Astronomy, and Materials Science.
Hi, this is Dave Cornelison, and you are listening to the web version of STEM Spots. With me today in the studio is Dr. Carrie Franklin. She's a professor of English and the director of assessment at Missouri State University. She also founded the Ozarks Writing Project and the Center for Writing in College, Career, and Community. Thanks for stopping by, Carrie.
Thank you, Dave. I'm so glad to be here.
Now, Carrie, you're an English professor and very interested in writing, but you also have some involvement with something that is reflected in an acronym called STEAM, Science, Technology, Engineering, Arts, and Mathematics. So talk a little bit about your own involvement in that, why you think the field matters, and what your goals and efforts are.
I didn't start off thinking that I knew anything about STEAM. That was just a word. But I had gotten involved and had a small grant from the MacArthur Foundation to do a project with teachers on making. And so my background, I have a master's in technical professional writing and had worked as in the software industry a little bit, and was thinking about, well, what are the things that we make? And the first thing that came to mind was, robots. And so we had somebody from the Jordan Valley Innovation Center to come, and I had groups of teachers and kids make robots with essentially Tupperware. And we talked about the writing piece, though. So, you know, when you make something, or when you do an experiment, or when you create a craft, or if you're in family and consumer sciences and you write a recipe, like what's the writing that is involved when you do something where you make? And a lot of times it's in science and it's in technology and engineering and math are all things that we use writing to think and to communicate. But we don't always consider that aspect.
So we talked about this a little bit, you and I, and this whole idea of STEAM and how it came about. And so at some level, people might think that it's STEAM is a co-opting of STEM so that arts can get some publicity, or so that arts can get some attention that it desperately needs. But some people would also say that there's a deep, intimate connection. And so where do you come down on that? How do you see that sort of connection?
Well, I think it's really easy to kick out the A and take it right back to STEM. Because when you hear the word arts, you might think of, you think it's creative and you think of joy and you think of all these things that you don't associate with science, technology, engineering, and math for most people. So to get to your question, when you look at policy and you look at grants, there are so many opportunities out there for science, technology, engineering, and math, and a lot fewer in the humanities, very little funding related to that. So I do think it forces people like myself in academia to say, well, how does our work as writing researchers connect in these other areas? Because if we want to help improve writing in schools for, kindergarten through college, how do you get involved in that? And so one way to step in and involvement, it's made us evolve as researchers to kind of consider how does writing, and writing is my area, connect with science, technology, engineering, and math.
Right. And those connections, one of the things you and I have mentioned, and I think it's true, is that when students get to college, a lot of times people think college is going to fix things. The university sometimes hears language that makes it sound like it's our job to fix something. Is that even possible, or should this be something that is addressed much earlier than that?
Are you talking in terms of writing?
I'm talking in terms of both writing and STEM. We hear many times that students aren't effectively trained in various areas. Might be writing, might be that they're not at the right math level, might be a whole bunch of other things. I know in physics we're told all the time that there's not enough involvement of particular underrepresented groups, and we're very worried about that, and we're cognizant of the fact, but it's not clear necessarily that we can fix a problem that's sort of handed to us. And so we're always struggling with where do we go and where do we start in order to address some of the problems that are inherent. So do you see these STEAM kind of efforts, or let's say writing within science, do you see those as starting earlier than the university?
Definitely. So we've been, for the last 10 years, doing a one-day writing conference for 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th graders to come to campus. And fortunately, I think one of the highlights is when you come and you do physics experiments with students and also connect it to poetry and the writing that you do. And I feel like that's unique because people don't consider physics and creativity. You know, physics feels like a, you know, very, you know, standard and it's linear and it's very clear about what you do. And then to bring in the complexity and you help students with the writing and with poetry to be able to delve deeper into something as weighty as physics. So, but that can't happen when you're a senior. It has to start really early. And I think, and it's awesome to think about science really early, but I think what makes it even more impactful for the future is when they think about the writing and they can do the writing. A lot of times in schools, when they do writing, it's just assessed and evaluated. You get an A, B, C, or D. But that writing piece and using writing to help you understand complex concepts in a way that's not just graded where it's A, B, C. It's not always the quality. Great scientists and mathematicians have written volumes trying to understand what they're doing. Do we give those same opportunities to students?
Right.
No, in fifth grade.
That's true. I mean, you and I, it's not clear to me because I always thought there was a considerable amount of writing in K through 12 still. There was, I think, a reasonable amount when I was a student. It's hard to remember back that far. But it's not necessarily true, is it, that elementary school students spend a lot of time writing?
Yeah. This is often cited research from Appleby and Langer, but about 15 minutes of writing occurs a week.
That seems almost impossible.
And when I say writing, that's note-taking. A majority of that 15 minutes was note-taking. So it's not composing longer pieces. But if you even look at the data from our own students at our university, there's not a lot of writing going on, especially longer pieces of writing.
Yeah, that's interesting to me. So you're involved in the Center for Writing in College, Career, and the Community. And if the people in career fields look at this, they're going to say they want people who can communicate the results of whatever it is they're doing, some sort of a product test or an economic development or whatever. But where do students struggle the most, do you suppose? Sort of the ability to write, the actual technical pieces of it, or is it more the will to write?
That's a good question. You know, I used to be a middle and a high school teacher, and so the first thing that I had to tackle was the will and the motivation, because they had felt like a failure for so long in terms of writing, that I'm not a good writer, sort of like people say I'm not good at math, but that I'm not a good writer, that I can't do this. And they felt, the perception was that writing should be easy. If you're good, quote-unquote good at writing, that it's easy. But in fact, you know, writing's really challenging, and the more that you know, the harder it gets. So getting them to increase their fluency, that doesn't mean the quality, that doesn't mean having everything perfectly punctuated. It means helping them to get their pen on paper and being able to generate ideas in writing. That's the first step. And just daily practice and lots of opportunities to write without evaluation helps get them motivated. I think then the next thing, you know, how do you organize those ideas? So you have 20 pages of writing, you have 5 pages of writing. How do you organize that? You know, how do you communicate a central idea? I mean, that's not an easy thing to teach. It takes time.
No, I understand. Just out of curiosity, when you did this teaching yourself, one of the things I've always been fascinated with is reading the stories about famous writers. So, mm-hmm. you know, one of my favorite authors is F. Scott Fitzgerald, but I've also read some James Thurber. And I read about these people who would have their walls decorated with rejection slips from all the early times that they had tried to get their writing accepted, usually to magazines at the time, journals.
Right.
Do students understand that failure, or whatever you want to call failure, let's put it this way, non-acceptance by a higher authority mm-hmm. is just part of the process? We have trouble with that in the sciences, where people look at failure and they just ignore it by basically not giving it an opportunity. So they'd rather not do than to do and fail.
Well, someone who changed the way I teach writing was Dr. Peter Elbow, but he talks about this audience of map and response. And so I would usually present to students of all ages this audience of map and response, and you have audiences of allies. So you share something with your wife, and she reads it, and you know, she says, "Hey, good job, Dave." And, you know, she's an ally. You can depend on her for that. But you might submit something to the dean, and that's a different audience, and there's sort of a different set of expectations. But so you sort of map out what those experiences are. And so to get them thinking about that, that you want to have experiences with all these kinds of writing, where you write and you have an appreciative listener, you know? And we don't offer those kinds of opportunities. It makes me wonder about math, too, a little bit. Like, when do we have an audience of appreciative listeners where you get to read something and they sort of applaud? That's just as important as having somebody really kind of give you a critique. But to me, learning the process of drafting, every writer, I mean, like, it's not a failure. It is part of the process and drafting and reshaping. And, you know, you and I both have had to write, and we've never written something in a first draft. Probably not even an email, hardly.
Not even an email, hardly. You know, that's interesting also, because in the writing community, you get this idea that there's an editorial process where a third person might come in and they might look at what you're doing and then they might help you. So great authors had sometimes very great editors, mm-hmm. who helped them see whatever it was that they needed to focus on, or maybe something that they could expunge from their work. And in the STEM fields, so much of the time, of course, people think that it's right or it's wrong. So, of course, most people, there's nothing worse than getting in front of a class and doing a math problem on the board, right? Because the judgment seems to be immediate and final. That's wrong or that's right. In the sciences, though, and people might find this interesting, much of the time the things we do are a development process also, because if you're doing experimental physics, you try things all the time that just don't work. And then you modify your equipment and try something different, and then something else doesn't work. And slowly but surely you work your way towards a final product. It's very similar. There's an editorial process, but I don't think people see that. So when you work with the student, in the writing part of it, is it the teacher's job to become this editor who's also on the student's side? Is that true?
Right. Well, it's interesting that you bring that up, because I wrote an article about that. So you have maybe in a high school classroom, you might have 90 students if you teach in Springfield. So how on earth are you an editor for 90 students if you want to have them write enough to actually become a better writer? It's impossible. You can't do it. So, I mean, one of the key things that I always felt like you could teach, you need to help teach people how to have a conversation and talk to each other and to give different kinds of response. So, for example, they might write something. Let's say you and I were writing something, and I write something and I give it to you, or I read it to you and you say thank you. That's appreciative listening. I don't always need you to critique it. But then as you go on and you get a little bit more experience, what are the questions that actually help people to improve their writing? So, for example, a lot of times we just pass the paper over and we say editor, and editor means correct, right? An editor corrects your work. Well, then it's not your writing anymore. So do you want somebody to respond to help you identify what are the strengths of what you're writing and where they're not understanding? If you could get them to talk a little bit about, when you read writing, here's where I don't understand, and this part is really clear to me. So how do you develop? I like to develop conversations that are a little bit more nuanced, rather than this is correct or this is not, or this needs a comma, or this, you know, doesn't.
And even in science, amazingly enough, it does turn out to be that is true. And I think we're missing, unfortunately, the ability to get students to understand that. For similar reasons, throughput really matters. And when you have tons and tons of students in a classroom at a high school level, you have to get them all through the process. So therefore, the process becomes efficient, but not necessarily the best process, I suppose.
I think that's why collaboration is so important. I mean, you know, we kind of say collaboration, oh, of course, everybody collaborates. But, you know, true collaboration, you know, you and I have been talking a lot about writing and science, and my math colleagues and I have been too, and computer science. But, you know, true collaboration, I mean, it takes time. It takes a lot of thinking, and it takes a lot of sharing. But it's the best part of what we do. But how do you replicate what we get to do at the university with students, and not as seniors, but when they're in fifth and sixth grade?
Well, that's quite interesting. Of course, we're going to have some conversations, and hopefully some things will come out of that where maybe some projects can get started. What's on the immediate horizon as far as projects that you might be working on?
Well, I'm excited to work with you and colleagues in computer science and math and art and music to think some more about how do we create interdisciplinary learning opportunities for students, you know, really in a deep and thoughtful way, because we see the connections among these disciplines. But, you know, it's going to take some time, I think, for us to think about what does that look like for a classroom? What does that look like for curriculum? What does that look like for research? But I'm excited to work with my colleagues and to think about that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I would agree. I think that we're on the same page when we think that the most difficult part about this is you've got to be in for the long haul. Would you say that that's part of the problem?
Yeah, and that's the joy of it too, really. I mean, we get caught up in looking for the answer and the way that's going to light the path for eternity. But really that process of this back and forth and this dialogue and this discussion and collaboration, yeah, it takes time and it's complex and it's really messy, but it's part I love.
Yeah. Well, Carrie, thanks so much for stopping by.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here.
Really appreciate it. And this is Dave Cornelison for STEM Spots, signing off.
STEM Spots is available online at ksmu.org.